You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of the Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill. This time looking ahead to the action on Thursday, the 26th of April, and the Punchestown Festival continues, of course, with the third day of action from over in Ireland. Loads of great stuff here in Britain as well, both for flat and jumps fans, and it's live on Racing Radio. Ross Briley, Dale Gibson and John Babb are in the studio. But for now, here on the podcast, my name's John Gibby, and I'm joined by Kevin O'Malley. Hello, Kevin, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all, John. How are you?
Good, yes. Good to have you with us on the podcast today. And an exciting week at Punchestown.
Yeah.
Got underway yesterday as we record this, and I guess the emphasis really being on the exciting. We'll talk about a couple of the winners in a minute, but we really have to start off with that incident that I'm sure we're going to be talking about for some time to come. And that came during the novice chase, of course, with Al Boonfoto either sort of running out or being ridden out, I suppose, between the final two by Paul Townend, carrying out Finian's Oscar in the process and needing the storyteller for Gordon Elliott to come through and win the race.
Yeah. I think what this was a really dangerous incident that was human-driven and not equine.
Yeah.
Usually when things like this happen in racing, it's equine, and you think to yourself, you know, it's a horse. We can't help if a horse goes crazy and jumps over a fence it's not supposed to and causes a pile-up. But this was human-driven, and afterwards, after it happened, to me it seemed at least that racing let itself down a bit through lack of any kind of health and safety procedure afterwards, kind of investigative procedure. Paul Townend obviously refused to speak to the media afterwards, which I thought was a bit of a lost opportunity for him to at least settle things down slightly, even if it was just to say, I'm not willing to comment just now, but I need to speak to the owners and the trainers first. And, you know, just the fact that it was a very dangerous incident, you know, that the Irish stewards put out a statement afterwards that was wholly lacking in any kind of attention to the fact that it was a really dangerous incident that could have killed somebody. You know, everybody was saying on Twitter last night that nobody will feel worse than Paul Townend. And that is the case. You know, that is the case. But at the end of the day, he made a very big error. And we're in a professional environment here. You know, he's a professional sportsman. He's an athlete. It's a very, very big event. A lot of eyes on it. And I just think that the reaction to it just made racing look a little bit silly. And I found it all a little bit disappointing, I have to be honest.
As we record this on Wednesday, Paul Townend has said this morning to the media that it was basically some confusion surrounding. He thought he was supposed to avoid the final fence, which has been met with a little bit of confusion because obviously there were no signs in front. Apparently he heard a shout of some sort from around the crowd. We still don't really know what went on, but is there anything Irish Racing can take going forward in terms of the procedures for this sort of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because when you're at a big, you're in the heat of a big race, you're approaching the final fence in front, you're going to go and probably win the thing, and a shout from behind causes you to alter your actions and do something that's wholly unsafe. And I think that needs to be prevented in the future, because what's going to stop another jockey reacting to a shout from behind him?
Yeah.
You know, jockeys are always shouting at each other mid-race. There's people all around the place making noise. But, you know, to the best of my knowledge, it's hard to hear things around you when you're riding a horse at the best of times. So I do think it needs to be looked at. I think that, you know, there should be some kind of a health and safety directive for jockeys in terms of communication mid-race. What to look out for? What are the glaring signs that unless this happens, you don't do that?
Yeah.
You know, and to me, it seemed that there was no obvious reason whatsoever why 50 yards from the fence he should dart across. You know, there was no flag. There was nobody waving any flags around. There was no arrows at the side of the fence suggesting that it had been dulled off. There was no stricken horse at the other side of it. There was nothing there apart from the last fence in a Grade 1 race. So yeah, it was a glaring mistake on Paul Townend's end, and it just looked it looked terrible. You know, and it's hard. It's still hard for us to get a grip on exactly why he did it. You know, we can say that he heard a shout, but okay, he heard a shout. Well, then we need to investigate where that shout came from.
Mm.
What did the shout say?
Mm.
And how can we prevent jockeys reacting to noises and shouts in that manner in the future to prevent something like that happening again?
Yeah,
because next time it might not be as healthy an outcome as it turned out to be. You know, the horse was fine, the jockey was fine, nobody got hurt, but that was actually quite lucky to my mind. You know, Album Photo could have hurt himself badly. The way that Paul Townend came out the side, he could have hurt himself very badly. So could Robbie Power and Finian's Oscar. There could have been more horses involved. Lucky that there was only two approaching into the final fence and not just one. So there's lots of things that need to be looked at to prevent something like that happening again. But because it was such a unique and isolated occurrence, I can't see there being much done.
Yeah.
It's a funny one because you don't, you know, Paul Townend has an immaculate record. You know, he's been a real pioneer in professional riding in Ireland for some time now. And, you know, I think he's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders right now, doesn't he? Let's face it. Ruby Walsh is on the sidelines. He's got high profile ride after high profile ride after high profile ride. He'd already lost on Get a Bird. He'd already lost on Duvan. So the pressure was building. And, you know, something happened to him. You know, he's obviously made a glaring error, and it's still hard to get a grip on exactly what he did, but it didn't look good and it wasn't handled well afterwards, and that's just the facts of it, and it is disappointing, John.
It is a difference from how it's handled. I know that the BHA isn't always exactly a golden beacon of how horse racing should be administered, but in Britain, within stewards' reports, there's more of an explanation in terms of what riders and trainers and connections have said to the stewards within inquiries and their dealings and stuff like that. That probably would have been quite helpful yesterday.
It would have been. It would have been, for sure. I mean, as I say, the fact that it was human-driven rather than equine-driven makes it a bit more difficult because it was such an isolated, unique thing. To my mind, I've never seen a more dangerous occurrence of dangerous riding in national hunt racing in the 15 years or so that I've been in racing. You know, I've been a fan of racing. So yeah, it was just, I hope we don't get a repeat of it. I hope that there is some kind of an investigation into what this shout was that he reacted to.
We don't know if it was a jockey, we don't know if it was someone from the outside rail, it could have been anything.
What was the noise? You know, so I heard a shout. Well, where did the shout come from and what did it say? It's kind of important, don't you think?
Mm.
So yeah, overall a little bit disappointing. I hope that Townend gets the support that he needs because he's obviously going to be feeling worse than anybody else at the moment. And I hope that we can learn from it and move on from it.
When slightly happy news, we'll take a quick look at the other two grade ones that took place on the first day of Punchestown. And they include, of course, the champion chase. Undersow has come through to beat a very classy field, you'd have to say, in this grade one contest. Kevin, he's bounced back from his disappointment at the Cheltenham Festival in good style. And he's beaten Duvan, the odds-on favourite.
He was brilliant yesterday. And from a long way out, it looked as though he was going to win the race and prove very, very difficult to catch. They gave him quite an easy lead, you would have to say, and he always maintained that kind of 5-6 length lead throughout, and he was going so well in front and enjoying himself so much that it was always going to be very, very difficult for any horse to get past him. I thought Duvan, his jumping was a little bit sketchy. He didn't travel as strongly as he usually can, but I still think he put in a pretty respectable run there.
Yeah.
It was the first time that we've seen Duvan at the business end of a race for quite some time. Everybody was giving him a massive chance yesterday, including myself, based on the fact that he ran well up to four out at Cheltenham, but he didn't run from four out to the line because he fell. So we got no idea really at Cheltenham what he was capable of at the business end of a race. And we found out yesterday that, you know, really, even though Indesol was at his absolute best, Duvan did have the opportunity to gain ground on him, and the fact is he didn't. You know, he didn't close that gap. So maybe he isn't the force of old, maybe he isn't the great horse that we made him out to be, but at the same time, it's the first time he's completed a race in a grade one for quite some time. And I think he came out of it looking pretty good for next season. In terms of distance and plans for them, I don't really know where they're going to go with him next, but it'll be interesting to see.
It was also, in terms of the opposition Duvan was facing during his novice campaign over fences and then during the early part of his first season out in open company, other than sizing John, who was running at the wrong trip, he wasn't really racing against anything like the quality of Undersow, Min, you know, you could even say Atois Phil, not really.
No, not really. But I mean, Atois Phil's probably put in a career best, certainly over a 2-mile trip. I mean, yeah, Duvan is he's an excellent talent, but it's so difficult for horses when something goes wrong to come back and compete at the very highest level. And the fact is that, you know, Undersoul probably doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Mm.
He's one of the modern greats for sure. He's so versatile, so consistent. He just keeps coming back for more. He loves it. He jumps for fun, and he's all class. And he's an absolute credit to his owners, to his trainer, and he was given a masterful ride by Patrick Mullins as well.
The other grade one was actually the first grade one of the cup. We've sort of gone through them in reverse order here, and that was the champion novice hurdle. Surprise winner if this one, Kevin. Draconian has come through to win for William Mullins. Probably not the Mullins horse we thought might be crossing the line in front here. He's won it at 25-1.
And won it handsomely, it has to be said, under a masterful ride from Noel Fahili. Very patient on him, got him jumping. His jumping was really slick and clean. He's only a 5-year-old, so he was entitled to improve on what he'd shown thus far. But what he had shown thus far didn't show us that he could beat the likes of Get a Bird and Mengli Khan and those. But the fact is, Mengli Khan and Get a Bird, well, Mengli Khan ran his race into third, but certainly Get a Bird ran well below par. Paloma Blue finished stone last, so that made things a little bit easier for those that were going off at bigger prices. I actually back Vision de Flo, who I think is going to make a lovely chaser next season. As for Draconian, he's got loads of speed, he's obviously got loads of class. I'm not saying that he's going to be a champion hurdle contender or anything, but he's certainly a classy horse to have around.
I think if you're looking at the form of what he's achieved this season as well, I think he probably doesn't want it bottomless. He's not run badly in his runs in novice hurdles, grade 2 last time when he was 12 lengths behind Getabur, but he's taken that form to a new level when he's run on yielding to soft.
I certainly think they'll keep him over hurdles for another season next year. I could be wrong on that front, but he looks a hurdler to me. He looks like a 5-year-old that could do with another season over hurdles to see what he can achieve, see how far he can go. And even if he did that, he'd still be a 6-year-old next year, ready to go chasing, if that's the way they choose to go with Draconian. Vision Day's Flow, you know, he just needs fences immediately.
At once.
He's a tremendous specimen. He really is a good looking horse, Vision Day Flow. Mengli Khan, another really talented horse, you know, he'll probably attempt to go over fences next year, given that he's owned by Jigginstown. And overall, it's been a really, really exciting novice year at both sides of the Irish Sea. You know, it's just been, there's a fantastic quality of youngster coming through at the moment. And even though we had a surprise winner, he was a good surprise winner, a solid winner of a good race.
We'll move now from looking at the action from Tuesday onto a couple of selections you've picked out for Thursday's racing, Kevin. They both run at Punchestown. What's the first?
The first one, I would say my next best, would be Josie's Orders in the 450.
Love Josie's Orders.
Do you?
Yeah, big fan of
Yeah, I love him too. I mean, he was pulled up last time out, but I can't help but feel that he has to come good at some stage this season. I mean, he was pulled up at Fairy House the last day. He finished sixth at Cheltenham. He wasn't quite at his best that day. But he's got a very, very good record at Cheltenham, at Punchestown. But I think really the icing on the cake for me fancying this horse is Nina Carberry. She's ridden him 6 times, she's won 3 times and been placed once, so she's got a tremendous record on him. And I just think he might just come into this race, despite that he hasn't been at his best the last twice. I think Ender will have him fully tuned up for this race. I think the extra couple of furlongs will suit him. I think that the course will suit him. I think the slightly better ground will suit him. And all of those pieces seem to be in place if you can just conveniently ignore the fact that he's been out of form in these last 2 starts.
He was pulled up last time out, but also that was in a handicap hurdle over an intermediate trip, which is not his sort of race nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, equally, you would have liked to have seen him maybe flourish a little bit more and run a little bit better than he did. But it's all about this race for him, isn't it, really? And, you know, there's a couple of horses in here that could trouble him, you know, Over Nat and Bless the Wings, and even Cantlow. My Murphy is a good horse in his day as well, but I can't help but feel that if Josie's Orders anything like his best, he'll just have a little bit too much boot for them.
And what about your Nat then, Kevin? Runs in the feature race of Stayers Hurdle, I believe.
Yes, in the Stayers Hurdle, I rather like Identity Thief. He won at Aintree last time out. I put him up on my blog at a nice big price, and it was a wishful bet more than anything. I watched him in the Champion Hurdle, and if you watch the Champion Hurdle again, John, and keep a very close eye on Identity Thief, he was always just not quite comfortable with the pace that they were going. It affected his jumping, it affected his ability to travel, but he still kept himself in contention behind Bouverdaire and Mellon, and he stayed on really strongly up the hill, and that led me to think that if they did step him up in trip at Punchestown or Aintree, that he would have a decent chance of proving himself up to grade one level over 3 miles. And, you know, at Aintree, he he actually produced a really good speed figure. He ran up to an RPR of 165, which was £3 superior to Penn Hill. Penn Hill's performance at Cheltenham, and Penn Hill is quite a sharp price for this race.
6-4 at time of recording.
6-4, and I believe Identity Thief was 5-1 yesterday at William Hill.
Still 5-1.
You know, and on pure form figures, Identity Thief's performance at Aintree was superior to Penn Hill's performance at Cheltenham. Now, when you consider that Penn Hill was you know, that was his main target all season for Cheltenham, he acts at Cheltenham better than anywhere else. I don't know, maybe he'll be vulnerable tomorrow, and he is short enough in the betting in what is quite a deep looking race. I can't help but feel that 5-1 Identity Thief, given that his form, the entry form, could be a little bit stronger, is quite an appealing bet. So he'll do for me. I think he's definitely the horse to beat there.
Identity Thief, 5-1 at time of recording at the 5:30 at Punchestown, the Champion Stayers Hurdle. And of course, Thursday's racing action is live on Racing Radio. We'll also have another edition of the Daily Racing Podcast tomorrow when Dale Gibson joins me on the show. But Kevin, thanks for joining us on today's edition.
Thank you, John.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.